Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So I don't want to give any politicians in the area or their wives ideas, but now we're going to talk to a local writer who has written a book about getting through divorce without losing yourself to the anger and bitterness that seem to go with the legal proceedings. Gabriel Cohen found himself looking for answers when his wife walked away from their marriage, and he is sharing what he found in his new book, Storms Can't Hurt the Sky, A Buddhist Path Through Divorce. You might know Gabriel Cohen from mystery novels set in Red Hook or from the reading series that he curates at a bar there. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
In a nutshell, what did Buddhism offer you that helped get you through the divorce?
Well, my marriage fell apart pretty suddenly, and I think, as would happen with most people in that situation, I was trying to deal with a lot of really difficult feelings. I was angry, I was depressed, I was confused, and I was just searching for something that basically would lessen my suffering. I think, I don't know of too many people that have a happy experience of divorce, and so I was sort of looking for a way out of those difficult feelings, and Buddhism is the last thing that would ever have occurred to me as a way out of that.
How did you find it?
I was coming out of a little restaurant in Washington Square Park, and I saw a sign that said, How to Deal with Anger, and it was advertising a Buddhist talk, and that caught my eye right away just because the title of the talk was How to Deal with Anger. And I didn't really know much about Buddhism. I kind of assumed that it was about blissing out and maybe sort of suppressing or denying the fact that you were angry. And the title of that talk was just so direct. It was How to Deal with Anger. So I decided to go check out this talk.
In that first lecture that you attended, the speaker asked if the book he held had an existence outside your mind. That seems like a really abstract question, but it got you.
It does seem like a really abstract question, and it seemed like it was leading to maybe this idea that everything in the world is illusory. And if you actually get into Buddhism, you start exploring that idea, but that's not really the point he was making. The point he was making was that he held up this book. He says, Do you think this has an independent existence outside of your mind? And everybody who was listening to his talk raised their hand like, of course it's independently existent. And he said, Well, how do you know? And we said, well, if you drop the book, we could hear the book. We can see the book. If you flip through the pages, we can hear it. So, of course, it exists separately. I mean, I was thinking at the time, if I keel over right now, of course the book's still going to be there. And the point that he was making for this particular talk was not really, does the book exist or doesn't the book exist? What he was trying to lead us to seeing was that we knew it existed because we were perceiving it through our senses and processing that through our mind. And he led us on to see that that's true of everything in our lives. We perceive other people, we perceive events, we process everything through our minds. And that's actually really good news because it means that instead of trying to transform the world around us to make us feel happier or suffer less, we can work on the other end, which is we can change the way we think about things. That's actually pretty much an easier process than trying to change the whole world.
Listeners, we can take a few phone calls for Gabriel Cohen, author of Storms Can't Hurt the Sky, The Buddhist Path Through Divorce. Any psychotherapists listening who maybe incorporate Buddhist teaching into your practice, any Buddhist teachers want to call in and talk about whether Buddhism is for everyday annoyances or more about, you know, achieving spiritual transcendence, call us at 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692, or post to our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Gabriel, do you think Westerners see Buddhism differently than people born into it? Does it escape all the messy family, class, cultural tangles that the religions we've inherited have? Does it, you know, have all those same issues in Asia?
I think that most Westerners tend to see Buddhism as this kind of esoteric foreign religion. And one thing that really surprised me at the very first talk that I went to was I was expecting that kind of foreign aspect. I was expecting chanting. I was expecting rituals. And instead, the guy who was giving the talk started talking about things like what happens when you have trouble with your boss when you go to work, or what happens if somebody's doing something annoying on the subway. And that was a real surprise to me, because it seemed like more of a psychology than a religion.
Do you follow a particular branch of Buddhism?
Mostly I'm studying a sort of outcropping of Tibetan Buddhism, but I also try to cast a wide net. I'm interested in all kinds of Buddhism, Zen and meditation, Vipassana meditation, all kinds of Buddhism.
And it was only through your emotion surrounding your divorce that you got into this in the first place?
I think that I might have just passed by that sign under other circumstances. I just might have thought, okay, well, this Buddhism thing is some kind of weird thing. It doesn't really relate to me. And I went to this talk because I was angry, and I saw the sign, How to Deal with Anger. And immediately, within that first two-hour talk, I got this really strong sense that this was something that might help me to reduce that anger.
Is it a religious conversion, in a sense? Is this the same as somebody who's floundering in their lives finding Christ?
I don't think so, because, as I said, that Buddhism seems almost more like a psychology than a religion. And one thing that I find very interesting about it is that you don't have to give up whatever your current religious beliefs are to benefit from these ideas of Buddhism. You can be, Christian or Muslim or Jewish or whatever.
And people will hear your name, Gabriel Cohen, and say, oh, is he a Jewish Buddhist?
There's a joke that people of the Jewish persuasion tend to be attracted to Buddhism. I'm not really sure why, but they're called Boo-Jews or Judists.
Judists. So you go to sit on Thursday nights and to temple on Friday nights, something like that.
I thought that there would be this idea of a god in Buddhism, and that was a sort of surprise too. The Buddha is not considered a god, a deity. He basically said, I'm just a normal person, and he went through some difficult life experiences, and he meditated really deeply on how his mind worked. And his message was, anybody can do the same thing that I did. It's not that he's some kind of supernatural being that we have to look up to. He's a really direct example that anybody can do this.
Gabriel Cohen, author of Storms Can't Hurt the Sky, The Buddhist Path Through Divorce. Gabriel, put on your headphones. We're going to take some calls, starting with Michael in Park Slope, who says he is a divorce mediator who studies Buddhism. Uh-huh. Is that right, Michael?
Yeah, that's correct. I've just actually recently been training in mediation, and I'm starting a practice in divorce mediation. And when I first went to my first mediation training session at the end of the 5 days, I approached one of the instructors and said, I've been studying Buddhism for many years, and this really is, being a mediator in the divorce context really strikes me as applied Buddhism. And he said, well, actually, yes. And it turned out he actually is a Buddhist practitioner himself, the man who is teaching this course. And there's a big, we're having another retreat coming up, which is about mediation and meditation.
Huh. So give me an example of that on the ground from a mediator's perspective.
Well, one thing we try to do as mediators is hold that each person coming to the mediation, they're there because of a conflict. They're in divorce, is very intense conflict. And partly what we're doing is the same thing that Gabriel was talking about. Does the book have an independent existence? Each person in the mediation sees their point of view very, very clearly and distinctly, that they're right and the other person must be wrong. Part of what I do as a mediator is completely empathize with each person. So they get to see that these two opinions in the room that seem completely opposed can both be true at the same time for each person.
And so from a mediator's perspective, that just leads one to a more conciliatory standpoint and more likelihood to compromise.
Yes, it leads to be an ability for the parties each to get what they need, because they can let go of the idea that if the husband gets what he wants, that means the wife doesn't get what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
If you can shift the perspective to think that each person is seeing the problem from their own view, that the book doesn't have an independent existence outside of each of our minds, there's an approach that helps lead to the dissipation of
the... But this can only go so far, because if he gets custody of the kids and she doesn't, or if she gets the house and he doesn't, how much can Buddhism reconcile that?
Well, because a lot of what's going on isn't really about the house. It's about the feelings underneath, what the house means. And if you can decrease the combativeness and decrease the enmity and decrease the I win, you lose kind of approach, which is endemic to the legal system and what usually happens when people get involved with combative lawyers, that increases the win-lose perspective.
I'd like to second that there seems to be this very strong adversarial approach to divorce, and when it comes to the legal process, it's often like pouring gasoline on a fire. It's saying, look at your spouse as your enemy. And something I realized really early on in my own divorce was that being angry at my wife and blaming her was not going to reduce my own suffering. You know, ultimately the goal here was to hopefully have me suffer less, and actually also to have my wife suffer less. And I realized if I saw her as the enemy and blamed her, that wasn't leading in that direction at all.
So here's one more follow-up on that point that a listener writes in skeptically, saying detachment is easier said than done. I've used Buddhist constructs my entire life, but when you have a kid and you see her two weekends a month, good luck detaching.
Okay, well, I think that word, first of all, is kind of off base. Buddhism is not about detaching. I think there's this big misconception in the West. You were asking about the difference between East and West. There's this idea that Buddhists detach from life and get to a point where they really don't care about anything. And that's not what it's about at all. It's not about denying emotion or suppressing emotion. It's about being more aware of the fact that you're angry, for example, and then figuring out where that anger comes from. And in my case, one major insight that I got was that I thought my anger was coming directly out of my wife in a weird way, that it was coming from outside. And I started to see, as I started looking at how my mind worked, that almost always my feeling of anger was coming out of some really strong feeling of hurt. And I thought that I was uncomfortable with that feeling inside me, and I wanted to get rid of it, so I would project it out as anger, and I discovered that really never helped.
Allie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Allie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I love Buddhism, and I'm a big fan of Pema Chodron, and she talks a lot about how she experienced that groundlessness when her husband was cheating on her, and that sort of sparred her into investigating Buddhism, and now she's a Buddhist nun and all of these great books that she's written. And I guess my biggest question is, I really believe in a lot of the theories and what Buddhism says, but my mother, who is the one experiencing the divorce, doesn't necessarily, and she's in a lot of pain still, and it's been several years. And I guess my question is, whenever she seems to forgive him, and which is what the Buddhists recommend doing, and sort of forgiving and instead of holding on to all that anger, which sort of just corrupts you and keeps all that negative energy inside of you, whenever she starts to forgive him, it becomes more painful for him, for her, because then she feels like she's letting him in more, and all of those wounds are opened in her, versus when she feels anger and just pushes him away in her mind and just completely tries not to think about it, she can function more, she seems to say. And I just wanted to know if you had any advice or things that you would recommend doing for people that don't seem to be following what, I guess, the Buddhist mindset would be.
Well, in terms of what you're saying about forgiveness, I was actually kind of surprised because I had to ask myself a question. Did I have it within me to forgive my wife for the way that our marriage ended? And my original idea of that was that I shouldn't forgive her unless, first of all, unless she was going to acknowledge that I had done that, and unless she was going to say, okay, you're right, you know, I was wrong.
Exactly.
I was going into it with that kind of expectation. And I stumbled across a book about forgiveness. Actually, it wasn't by a Buddhist. It was by a Christian theologian. And he had a really different approach to forgiveness. He said that this is not something that you do in expectation of how the other person's going to behave. because, for example, I wrote my wife a long letter saying, I realize you didn't leave to hurt me. You left to lessen your own suffering, and I forgive you. And I got zero response. And I might have been angry about that. But what this guy in this book about forgiveness was pointing out was that just the act of forgiving helped me. It wasn't something that I necessarily had to do for her. I was walking around carrying this really big burden of anger and depression, and the act of just saying, I forgive you, opened up something in me. It didn't really matter what she did in response.
That is a tough one, right?
I think that's a really important distinction, too, because my mom did the same thing where she was forgiving him but expecting him to sort of come down on his knees and apologize for all he'd done, and that's why there was no positive result of the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, an interesting thing about forgiveness is that you don't even actually have to say to the person, I forgive you. It can be something that you are thinking and feeling inside, and you're just saying, I let go of this burden of anger that I'm carrying around, and that's going to help me as much as the other person.
That's a new way for a lot of people to look at forgiveness. Very useful, I think. Gabriel Cohen, my guest on WNYC, author of Storms Can't Hurt the Sky, The Buddhist Path Through Divorce. Allie, thank you for your call, and we will bring a psychotherapist into this conversation when we continue in a minute and see if there's any difference between a Buddhist approach to divorce and just what a good trained psychotherapist would tell you to do. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. On our website, you can see video clips from some of our recent segments, including Rutgers women's basketball coach Vivian Stringer, a year after Imus, when she was in our studio recently, and New York Philharmonic conductor Lauren Mazel on his trip to North Korea. That and much more at WNYC.org. Click on video. We continue with Gabriel Cohen, author of Storms Can't Hurt the Sky, The Buddhist Path Through Divorce. And this is a Mr. Smith calling from Astoria. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Dr. Smith, I'm a psychiatrist and psychoanalyst.
Forgive me.
Not at all. There's a treatment approach developed by a man named Jon Kabat-Zinn up at Harvard using mindfulness for depression that has been shown to be clinically effective.
Mindfulness-based cognitive therapy.
Yes.
And?
Basically, I would say there was a question raised, is this what psychotherapists do? What psychotherapists do is a bit of a Tower of Babel. But what the Kabat-Zinn approach focuses on is recognizing that our problem-solving skills are very useful, our analytic ability, to lead us to a course of action. But when the action needed is internal, we can get mired in rumination and depression. And that if we can move from an analytic mode of mind to a being mode of mind, being rather than doing, we can let things emerge in our awareness and let them be as they are.
So that is a very Buddhist approach. And Dr. Smith, I'm curious for you as, I guess, a practicing psychotherapist, how different is that from what some non-Buddhist-oriented but good psychotherapist would do for a person experiencing anger as they go through divorce?
Again, it depends on the form of psychotherapy, but I would say radically different. The focus in therapy tends to be A, on problem solving, B, on resolving conflict. To encourage a state of being, to some extent, it occurs in analytic work. The free association technique approaches a state of being as a way of dealing with data. But it's very different. I routinely these days invite patients I'm working with relevant problems to obtain a book called The Mindful Way Through Depression, which is a way of yourself learning to do this. The subtitle is Freeing Yourself from Chronic Unhappiness, which relates to the anger concern that the speaker began with in trying to deal with his divorce.
I'd like to clarify, if I might, a little bit about that approach to depression or approach to other problems. As I understand it, Jon Kabat-Zinn's work is really about mindfulness.
Yes.
And so it's really about becoming more aware that that these angry thoughts you have, or if you're depressed, these depressive thoughts are things that arise out of your mind, but they don't constitute what your mind is. That's why my book is called Storms Can't Hurt the Sky. The idea is that basically everybody's mind is pretty clear and peaceful, but that these thoughts arise that disturb that clarity. They're delusions. And so the approach to depression is to become more aware of these kind of mental loops that we run. I'm not a worthy person. I'm a sad person. I have to react a certain way. If you become more aware of that, you can let go of those thoughts, and they can just pass through your mind like clouds.
Yes. And they make mindfulness is akin to open-mindedness, is akin to open-heartedness, which is equivalent to loving compassion. The relation to Buddhism sort of flows from the focus on a state of being, and it's common to the two approaches. And I assume historically, Kabat-Zinn probably came to it through some awareness of that.
So, Dr. Smith, stay there for a minute, because I want to bring in Jim in New Rochelle, who I think is going to talk about going through divorce-related depression with conventional psychotherapy. Jim?
Yes.
Hi. Did I get that right?
That's very good. And I had two therapists, successive therapists, both women, one a Jungian, the other non-directional. And they led me to a distinction that it was important to feel the anger, but by feeling it, not to act on it. And perhaps not acting on it changes the state of mind in a way that accomplishes what your guest is focusing on. By not acting on it, one has to remain in contact with the former spouse because of custody and visitation and other issues. And each time, it's like an anesthetized surgery. But in those instances, you stay focused on the needs of the children, and you stay formally polite.
So are you asking whether that's the same thing as our guests are talking about?
I'm asking how that relates to what Gabriel Cohen is speaking.
Well, I think you've made a really crucial distinction there, and that is, in the West, we have this idea that, well, gee, isn't anger kind of helpful in a lot of situations, and don't we need to express anger? And the distinction you made is that there's a difference between feeling anger and expressing anger. Mm-hmm. And in a divorce, we're pretty likely going to feel a lot of anger. But Buddhists actually say that expressing anger is never a skillful way to deal with things.
Mm.
And that's sort of goes against these ideas that we have in the West that, like, for example, some therapists might advise an angry child who's a patient, I want you, when you're angry, to go in another room, and I want you to punch a pillow and express that anger.
Mm.
And actually what neuroscience is showing now is that what you're doing when you're punching that pillow is actually strengthening the parts of the brain that are designed to express aggression. You're training yourself in how to be angry. Huh. You're not relieving the anger.
Dr. Smith, how much do you agree with that analysis?
Well, regarding the issue of punching a pillow, it's necessary to start from where the patient is and move in a direction to which he is inclined or able to or comfortable with. So an interim move, the pillow punching might have a place, but I certainly agree with the fundamental point. But this is not part of most therapy as it is practiced.
So, Dr. Smith, thanks again for calling in. And Jim and New Rochelle, thank you very much for calling in. Brian Lehrer on WNYC for another few minutes with Gabriel Cohen, author of Storms Can't Hurt the Sky, The Buddhist Path Through Divorce. Then we're going to take calls from any of you who attended Easter services yesterday, particularly to find out if sermons from the pulpit touched on the Barack Obama Jeremiah Wright controversy. So we'll do that in a couple of minutes. Hold those calls for the moment. Gabriel, you mentioned in the book that you had written about Bernie Siegel's Love, Medicine, and Miracles earlier in your life, that book, and you had trouble buying the fact that people with cancer felt it was a gift. That's part of his premise. Did you end up feeling that way about your divorce?
It's not a gift that I would have asked for or that I would be very psyched to receive again, but I did end up having a much stronger appreciation of what was going on there with those patients. I used to work for a newspaper in New Haven, and I interviewed these people that were in this program. A lot of them were chronically ill, and some of them were dying of cancer, and some of them said, I feel that this has been a gift, because they were really able to transform their lives, whatever time they had left. And I think that's really the crucial issue here, is that we have these difficult experiences and difficult feelings when we get divorced or when somebody dies or when we're sick. And the real question is, how can we transform that into something positive? And I came to see that my own divorce was certainly a painful experience, but because I was unhappy, I was searching for something, and it led me into some pretty interesting directions. And in fact, that's why I'm here in the studio today, because I got divorced and I wrote this book and you invited me to be on the show. So that's a positive outcome.
Small consolation for losing your marriage, appearing on the Brian Lehrer Show, I hope. This is really a good New York story. Your divorce and the anger around your divorce has a real estate connection. That's very New York. And We also noticed that in the book, you use examples of anger management that many New Yorkers can relate to, like dealing with the annoying person on the subway. Do you think that New Yorkers have anger management issues in general differently from people elsewhere, if you've been elsewhere enough to have an opinion?
Well, I think that if you've ever been on a crowded subway at rush hour, you probably had to figure out some kind of way of managing, I don't know if it was anger, but at least a little irritation. And that you mentioned actually my favorite analogy of how this Buddhist insight works. And this is the very first Buddhist talk I went to. The teacher said, I want you to imagine that you're sitting on the subway and somebody sits down next to you and they're doing something you find really annoying. They might be popping their gum. They might be singing along with their iPod. And the normal way we think about that is, oh no, this external problem just intruded into my life, and now I'm going to get angry, or I'm not going to express anger, and I'm going to get depressed. We just think that the external situation was sort of inevitable, and our reaction is kind of inevitable. And the teacher said, I want you to think about this a different way. Let's say this same person sat down next to you, and they're doing the exact same irritating thing, but let's say that you were interested in becoming a more patient person. And you might look at this situation completely differently then. You might say, hey, here I am trying to practice patience, and here is this person who just sat down next to me, and it's providing me with this amazing opportunity to see how patient I can be. And I thought that was just really interesting. The external situation didn't change at all, but we changed the situation by the way we were thinking about it.
But what about the person clipping their fingernails on the subway? Is there any way to get past that?
Well, if you're angry, you might express that anger to them. And, you know, this is the New York subway, so God knows what will happen. Maybe they'll pull out a knife and stab you or something. They're not likely to say, gee, this person's angry at me, so maybe I better stop clipping my fingernails. So that angry approach is really not going to get you good results.
Yeah, and one of the vignettes in the book that I like is when you're suffering gave you that moment of connection with the other riders on your subway car. Maybe that's what you were getting at a moment ago, but that suffering does have a way of dissolving boundaries.
Well, Nietzsche, I guess, said, what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. And my experience after my divorce was actually kind of the opposite. It was that what doesn't kill us might have the potential to make us kinder. And I think I looked at people differently on the subway. As I was going through this horrible summer where my wife had left, I was looking for a new apartment. There were all these heat waves in New York. This was about 3 years ago. And I would ride the subway, and I think I really started to look at other people on the subway differently. I would think not like this; these are foreign people to me, and they look sad or they look silly or whatever. I would see other people that looked sad, and I would think, you know what? They're probably going through some tough stuff, too. They're really like me.
By the way, before you go, we should mention, especially for people who may be hearing author Gabriel Cohen and thinking, that's not his book, that you've actually had three books come out this year, which is quite a feat. The others are The Graving Dock, that's a mystery set in Red Hook.
Yes.
And Boombox, what's that?
Boombox is a book about four neighbors on one Brooklyn block who come into conflict when one of them, who's a teenager, buys a huge sound system and starts blasting gangster rap into their courtyard.
So maybe your Buddhism also helps with creative productivity.
Maybe so.
Or at least clearing the mind so that you can sit at the computer and not think about your divorce.
Well, it's certainly helped me, and that's really why I wrote the book, because I've actually gotten some really nice responses from total strangers who said, the same thing happened to me last summer. My husband left, and I just came across your book in a bookstore, and it really was a help to me, and that just made me feel like it was worth the effort to write it.
One of Gabriel Cohen's three new books is Storms Can't Hurt the Sky, The Buddhist Path Through Divorce.
I just want to correct you. It's actually A Buddhist Path Through Divorce. You have an early copy of the book. I just thought that was a little presumptuous to say that I'm offering the Buddhist path. So it's one path, my path.
Thanks a lot for joining us. Great to have you.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.